Good morning.
I'm Evan Bray. Great to have you here. And thanks for the texts that are coming in, still keeping us up to date on weather conditions. It's quite interesting that parts of the province are having a beautiful, sunny spring day, and other parts of the province are having something more reminiscent of the resurgence of winter. Snow is falling. We're hearing in places 8 to 10 inches of snow. Although what I will say is a lot of the texts that are coming in have the little smiley face emoji beside them saying, we need the moisture. So you look at a forecast, which in most of Saskatchewan within a couple of days is 15 degrees with sunshine. The snow is not going to, it's temporary pain, but it's not going to be here long term. Within the next couple of days, it predominantly will be melted throughout the province again. But the moisture is there to stay. And again, a number of people are pointing that out on the text line. But do take care. And if you have a particularly bad stretch of the road you want us to know about, don't hesitate to shoot us a text, 1-877-332-8255, and we can pass that along. Well, for the last hour, we open up the phone lines, open up the text lines, and we talked about your biggest concern. We got a week left in the election, the federal election, a variety of different things that could be thrown on the table as concerns. National unity was a concern for many people. Very, very few said Donald Trump and the trade war. It was brought up in a few of the texts, but for the most part, I feel like what has happened is Canada has settled itself to a place where we realize the Donald Trump effect is short term, and it may be pain, and there's work to do there, but it's not something that's going to last forever. And with a proper strategy, it's something that can be handled. So we get through our election, we elect a federal government and a leader who then will have to sit down and figure out what the best way to deal with Donald Trump is, which might be different, by the way, than the best way to deal with the United States. How you handle the leader of the United States in this case might be a different strategy. So we've come at this from a few angles, right? We've had negotiators, professional negotiators on the show to talk about what the art of negotiation might look like. But an article that I read last week in the Globe and Mail caught my attention. And the title of the article is, "As an Expert in Bullying, I Have Advice on Dealing with Trump." It's written by Tony Volk, who is a professor at Brock University in the Department of Child and Youth Studies. His studies include things like bullying, parenting, personality, and the evolution of childhood. So in this article, he talks about nearly two decades of trying to understand adolescent bullies. And a quote from the article, I just want to read this. It says, "I would argue that attention, popularity, and social status, also primary bullying motives, are what matter most to Trump. This is further amplified by our research that found Mr. Trump to be narcissistic. Status and personal image are of critical importance to the man who once said, 'Show me someone without an ego, and I'll show you a loser.'" Tony Volk, professor at Brock University in the Department of Child and Youth Studies, is my guest this morning and is joining me live from his office. Tony, thank you so much for joining the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit, before we even get into the Trump stuff, tell me a little bit about how you got into this line of work, studying what you study, particularly bullying.
Yeah, so I sort of came at it accidentally in the sense that when I was a graduate student at Queen's University, Wendy Craig, who's one of Canada's premier bullying researchers, asked me to look at a sample of 10,000 Canadian kids and see how they were doing with mental health, whether they were a victim or whether they were a bully. And what I found was the surprising finding that bullies, unlike victims, actually had better mental health and self-esteem than average children. So victims did poorly on mental health, but the bullies, who we thought were these damaged, broken individuals, were actually showing better mental health and better self-esteem than average kids, which made us rethink how and why people get engaged in bullying.
I'll be honest, it shocks me to hear that, because I've always heard that part of bullying is an insecurity amongst those that are bullies. Is that fictional?
Yeah, that's exactly the response we had, and that was the common wisdom at the time. And what we found is there's really two kinds of bullies. There's what we call bully victims, and those are kids who simultaneously are being victimized and being bullied. And they fit the stereotype of kids who have poor self-esteem, poor social skills. They respond with aggression very reactively. And they fit what we think of as a stereotypical bully. But they don't do the majority of the bullying. The majority of the bullying is done by what we call pure bullies, who are not also victimized. So the captain of the football team, the head cheerleader, they have perfectly good social skills and perfectly reasonable self-esteem. What's different is their motives to use their power for their own gain at the hands of others.
Tony Volk is my guest, Brock University professor in the Department of Child and Youth Studies, also associate member in the Department of Psychology. So can you talk a little bit about, and you've dealt with hundreds in your study, thousands in your study, what are some of the traits of a bully in the study and the work that you've done?
So bullies, by definition, what makes bullying different from regular aggression is that there's a power imbalance that makes it hard for the victim to fight back. And so bullies tend to come from wealthier backgrounds. They tend to be older. They tend to be more attractive. They tend to have better physical strength. All the things that would lend them the ability to have power in the first place. And then the critical personality trait that we find is not a lack of empathy, or even getting angry or frustrated easily. It's a belief that you are better than others. So it's an arrogant view of the world where you think that the world is competitive, it's dog-eat-dog, and the cream rises to the top and the crud sinks to the bottom. So that means you think it's fine to bully other people because you're naturally better than them. And if they weren't such losers to begin with, to use Trump's words, they wouldn't have been picked on in the first place. So it's this selfishness that really differentiates a bully from other children.
So when you're looking, and I want to stick with the work you're doing with adolescents, for example, now, when you're looking at those traits in a bully, what are strategies that you see unfolding and people are advising as in terms of how bullies can be dealt with?
Yeah, so one of the things is you don't want to simply rely on overt punishment because these are smart kids and they know how to avoid being caught by adults. The other thing is you don't want to rely on teaching them what's nice and what's bad because they already know that. So instead, we find that what's effective is reducing the rewards that they get from their peers. The problem with that is peers have a hard time changing the behavior of popular peers. And of course, many of these peer bullies are popular. The other thing that tends to work is giving them an alternate avenue for what they want. So if they're looking for popularity and status, we found it an intervention where you let them greet everybody who comes into the class, kind of like a Walmart greeter, which you think that sounds pretty hokey. But besides keeping them out of trouble, what that's doing is everybody is acknowledging them. So that itch that they have, that drive for being recognized and having that attention is being satisfied in a way that doesn't hurt the other kids. Mm-hmm. So you're not working against their tendencies and their interests. You're working with them to try and find a pro-social way of scratching those itches.
Okay, so Tony, I've been really purposeful in trying to keep you focused on your research, on the work you've done with adolescent bullying. Now let's bring it into the context of Donald Trump. You talked about traits of a bully. Often there's a power imbalance. You said words like wealthy and older, which would fit. I'm not sure attractive and physical strength do, but you did also talk about this belief that you are better from a, in the world view of the world is a competitive place and you've got to win. That does seem to fit with Donald Trump, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in the context of physical strength, he's not certainly compared to, you know, an average healthy man, a dominant person, but compared to Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, he's a tall, big man. And he has a presence about him that was more commanding than the others.
Fair enough. So now in terms of strategy, because as I've said, I mean, it's safe to say that the Trump stuff has subsided a little bit, given the fact that there's lots of issues in the election that Canadians are worried about. Once the dust settles after the election, there will be an expectation that our government will be sitting down and trying to work out something that benefits Canadians and obviously benefits the U.S. as well. If we look at it through your lens that you're talking about, from the perspective that Trump is a bully, what are some things that you think need to be woven into the strategy or considered when addressing Donald Trump?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we want to do is recognize that his approach to the world in general is transactional. Rather than cooperating, he's a competitor. So he likes competing with other individuals. So I wouldn't expect to walk up to the table and have somebody say, embrace the shared history that we've had or care about Canada-U.S. relations in anything other than a transactional way. So you need to be prepared to have something to offer the United States that he can claim as a win or a victory. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the first things that you want to do. Then you also want to go in from a position of strength so you don't look like a victim. Trump likes people, and we can get this in the next point, who kiss up to him and defer to him, but he doesn't necessarily respect those people. So when our premier, Doug Ford, threatened to shut off electricity to the northern states, which is not a really feasible threat, but it was a powerful threat, and Trump responded positively, saying he was a strong man and he respected that move. So you're going to have to show strength. But then the last thing, as I mentioned, is you also want to show strength without personally insulting Trump. Because if you insult somebody who's very concerned about their ego and their reputation, like Trump is, then you get what happens with Zelensky in the White House, where he turns and attacks you. Mm. So it's a very careful balancing act between having clear goals, projecting strength, but not directly threatening Trump personally or his ego. Mm.
That's a great blueprint, and I think just knowing and having observed some of the interactions that have happened over the last number of months since Trump became president, I can see clearly how those strategies would and will work quite well with the U.S. president. It's such an interesting lens to look at it. I loved your article in the Globe and Mail, and I'm really happy, Tony, that you were able to carve out some time for us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tony Volk, who is a Brock University professor in the Department of Child and Youth Studies. If you want to read his article, you can go back on the Globe and Mail. Just Google Tony Volk, V-O-L-K, the Globe and Mail, and his article will come up. But, you know, his approach to dealing with Trump, because even though this is not the biggest threat facing Canada right now, it is something. And on the to-do list of the prime minister, when the dust settles next Tuesday morning, a week from today, a new prime minister sitting in the chair, there's going to be a to-do list. And one of the things is going to be pick up the phone, have a conversation with U.S. President Donald Trump and arrange a time to meet. And so understanding a transactional approach, don't look like a victim. So come in strong, but also don't personally insult or attack the U.S. president. Find a way to give him some wins will be a strategy that, in Tony's mind, and it makes good sense to me, will work in dealing with the president of the United States. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
So I'm burning, stop burning.
Checking the text line, Steve from Regina sent a picture of terrible driving conditions, saying bad roads, packed snow, slush. Traffic has virtually come to a stop or very slow pace between Broadview and Whitewood on highway number one. It does not look to me like crews have been out and plowed that part of the number one highway. Lots of people in parts of especially south Eastern Saskatchewan screaming for highway crews to get out and help them with the roads. So do take care if you're heading out on the road. And thank you to everybody who's keeping us up to date. Thanks again, Tony Volk, who just joined us. He's the Brock University professor in the Department of Child and Youth Studies and associate member in the Department of Psychology. So he's done over 20 years of study and work with adolescent bullies. And he writes an article in the Globe and Mail about a week ago, caught my eye to the point that Libby and I put our heads together, of course, and plan this show every day. I said, I'd love to get Tony on to hear his thoughts, because he's basically saying, you want to know how to deal with Donald Trump? I can tell you. Now, there's a number of people that are, you know, saying Donald Trump is not our biggest issue right now. I am not debating that. I agree with you. When we did the open line segment and I said, here's my three biggest issues, Donald Trump was not one of them. I don't think he is our biggest issue. I do think we have better and bigger domestic issues to deal with. But it doesn't mean he's not an issue. It doesn't mean we aren't going to have to figure out a way to deal with him. And I loved the approach that Tony talks about. Kind of the 3 points drill down this way. He says you need a transactional approach. Have something to offer him as a victory. He's not all about emotions. And so sitting down with him and trying to help him understand this long-standing relationship that's existed between two countries. No, Donald Trump doesn't operate that way. You're not going to get at him through his heart, but you will if you come at it at the transactional relationship and you've got something to offer. Number two, don't come in weak. Don't look like a victim. He points at Doug Ford. Many people critical of Doug Ford and the way he operated. But you saw and heard Donald Trump say he's a very strong man. He's a very strong man. He ultimately decided not to cut off our electricity. But that shows the way in which Donald Trump views that type of strength. And number three, his point was, don't personally insult Trump. Know that he has a high vision of himself. He is someone who is very, very confident, and he is not going to want to be made to look like a fool. So you come in with those three things in mind: transactional approach, have something to offer, don't look like a victim, make sure you're strong, and don't personally insult him. To me, that's a good blueprint for our next government when they're sitting down. Dust settles after the election. You got to deal with Donald Trump. You got to talk about trade. We're going to be in renegotiations for Kuzma. All of these things are important things to keep in mind. So again, thanks to Tony for joining us. Okay, we learned yesterday about the passing of Pope Francis, 88 years old, a pope that has been given the name the People's Pope for lots of good reasons because of his connection with people all around the world. There are people right here in Saskatchewan, a number, that had the honor of being in the presence personally with the Pope. I'm going to connect with a couple of them. Michael McLean is my first guest, coming up just after 10:30. He had a meeting with the Pope just last fall. He's the campus minister for the University of Saskatchewan, St. Thomas More College. That conversation, what stood out in the meeting with the Pope, and why his Jesuit roots shaped the person he was, that conversation is coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, good morning. I'm Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Tuesday morning, making our way through another work week and one that is a bit of a mixed bag weather-wise. Texts continue to come in with road conditions. Boy, highway number one east of Regina to the Manitoba border, not looking good, that southeast part of the province. There's been some pictures. I know we had one from Bigger early this morning showing snow had hit that community as well. So snow, icy roads is a problem in parts of the province. Other parts of the province, it's business as usual with sunshine and dry. Although I will say I was on the highway between Regina and Saskatoon just before supper last night, and it was pouring right around Hanley. Man, it was coming down like windshield wipers, almost having trouble keeping up with it. So the moisture, anytime we can get moisture in spring, not a bad thing at all. Well, yesterday morning, we woke up and learned the news that Pope Francis had passed away at the age of 88. We've been watching closely the Pope's health because we know, of course, back in February, he was suffering some health issues that had him hospitalized for a period of time. But the strength of the Pope was shown. He returns to some of his duties. He is out of the hospital. He is back home. However, sadly, the Pope died died as the age of 88 years old, and we learned that yesterday morning. And so what has happened over the last little while, along with understanding what the process might look like going forward, we've also talked a lot about the Pope himself, the type of leader he was, and what that looked like. And it really is quite interesting for people that had the opportunity to interact personally with the Pope. Not many people can say they met the Pope, but for people that did, they will reflect on that meeting and reflect on what they saw, the impression they got from this great world leader. One of those people is my next guest, Michael McLean, who is campus minister for the University of Saskatchewan's St. Thomas More College. Michael McLean joins me by phone this morning. Michael, thank you so much for taking the call.
Good morning.
You had the opportunity to meet the Pope. When and how did that happen?
Yeah, it was very exciting for me. I in the fall of 2023, our president, Dr. Carl Still, he came back from a meeting of all the Catholic colleges and university presidents, and there was an invitation to come to a conference at the Vatican, and I was able to take up that invitation and represent Canada at a conference on pastoral care to university students in Catholic colleges and universities. And so it was entitled Towards a Polyhedric Vision. And so that actually was a callback to the Pope's, Pope Francis's encyclical Evangelii Gaudium, and it talks about how life is never simple. It's always got levels, different levels. And so he talked about a polyhedric vision in that document. And so this conference called that back. And so there was over 200 participants from 44 countries. It was really amazing to go to Rome and meet colleagues in campus ministry from different countries, and to hear the Pope really encourage everybody in chaplaincy and campus ministry to journey with young people, young adults at the university level, to appreciate the differences in the campus community, to accompany the students with care, and to act courageously. Those are the three things that he kind of impressed upon us, and really also to say, keep up the good work. And so that was really an exciting moment to be able to go and have a papal audience with that group, and I just never thought that would happen, and it was very exciting.
I can imagine. You know, as we learn more about Pope Francis, and sadly, this is the way it happens. Often when someone passes, you learn different things. I've had a number of people since yesterday texting, wanting to know. It's repeatedly being said that Pope Francis was a Jesuit, and people asking, what's the importance of that? What's the significance of that? What does that mean? Can you help us understand that, Michael?
Well, Pope Francis was a bit of a different pope just because he was the first non-European. He was from Latin America. He was from a religious order. So let's say, for example, St. Thomas More College, it was founded by the Basilian Fathers. That was a religious order that founded our college. And in Regina, we have Campion College. That was founded by the Jesuits. So the Jesuit order is committed to learning, to higher education, and to discernment. And so the way that you see Pope Francis' papacy roll out is you can see this Ignatian discernment, which is what the Jesuits practice. Some of your listeners might have heard of the examen, like a kind of a prayer you could do at the end of each day to say, you know, where did I really, you know, where did I really feel close to God during this day? When did I feel distance from God? What do I need help with, and what can I be thankful for? So it's a kind of reflection every day, and that's what the Jesuits practice. And so for a Jesuit, discernment and reflection is very important. And so what you see in Pope Francis's papacy is a really big thing where he rolls out something called the Synod on Synodality. So synodality is about dialogue, discussion, reflection. And Pope Francis said, who do we want to be involved in this dialogue? Everyone. tutti, tutti, tutti. He'd say, todos, todos, todos. It means everybody, everybody. He really wanted to reach out to hear how people are doing. Were they in the church pews? Were they not in the church pews? It didn't matter. He wanted everybody to be part of this dialogue and discussion. And some people might not have heard of the synod on synodality, but for those folks that are connected to churches, they would have heard this and said, wow, this is, we had sessions, synod sessions at the college here in Saskatoon, and some of the university students, the young people were like, wow, I've never been asked my opinion at church. This is a big deal for people to be able to name some of the places there. When you're talking about the highs and lows of life, to be able to name, you know, where have I felt supported, where have I not felt supported, and so it is an important process, and you could see that that was reflective of his Jesuit discernment.
Mm-hmm. This is fascinating, and I appreciate you helping us talk through this, because the understanding is much deeper when you understand the influence that that had on the Pope. Michael McLean is my guest, campus minister for the University of Saskatchewan's St. Thomas More College. We're close to the end of our time here, Michael, but I'm curious of this. I know for many of us that want to continue to be good leaders in whatever our discipline is, it will be no different for you. We often take bits and pieces from great leaders that we admire. What would it be for you if you think about you going forward? Pope Francis would hope that we all take some of his teachings and go forward with that. What would be some things that you think you've learned as a result of Pope Francis and his leadership that you will continue to employ going forward?
Well, I think that Pope Francis, early on in his pontificate, named it. He said, I wish we could have a poor church for the poor. He would always say, don't forget the poor. He reached out to young people. He reached out to migrants and refugees. He talked about working together to care for our common home. And so it was really about people. And he said in his encyclical Laudato Si about caring for the earth, he said, all it takes is one good person to restore hope. And I just think, you know, I've seen people say, well, I'm only one person. What good can I do? Said 5 billion people.
Right.
You know, what we do affects the lives of others. And I think that when we are hopeful, when we are making choices that that are good for everybody, or support the common good, we can make the world a better place. So I was inspired by Pope Francis, for sure.
I really appreciate you giving us some time this morning. Michael, thank you so much for taking our call.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Michael McLean, campus minister for the University of Saskatchewan, St. Thomas More College. He had the opportunity to meet Pope Francis, as did my next guest. In fact, we envisioned having Chief Erica Bowden on the show yesterday, but we had some phone challenges. So that's where we will go after the break, is the chief of Kauai's First Nation. Erica Bowden was part of the Canadian delegation that went over to meet with the Pope in 2022, which ultimately resulted in an apology to Indigenous people in Canada. That conversation with Chief Bowden coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Working our way through Tuesday morning. It's Evan Bray. Great to have you here. You know, I remember back in 2022 when Erica Bowden was part of a group that went over to Rome, to the Vatican, to meet with Pope Francis. Eric and I were able to work together lots in my time with the Regina Police Service, and I remember saying to her, wow, that is quite the trip. Well, today, as we reflect on the life and the legacy of Pope Francis, I'm happy to have Chief Erica Bowden, now Chief of Kauai's First Nation, joining me by phone. Chief, thanks so much for taking the call.
Good morning, Evan. How are you this morning?
Good, good. I remember when you went on that trip, Chief, I remember saying, wow, that is quite the trip. You came back. We talked a little bit about it. But as you reflect on that now, what impact did that trip have on you and ultimately on Indigenous people in Canada?
Well, first of all, I can only speak for myself, because before I share anything else, I really want to give a disclaimer in saying that every Indigenous person, First Nations, Métis, and Inuit person, has their own experience. The schools before Indian control of Indian education, where the First Nations took over the education system, our people had very, very different experiences depending on the decades and the policies at the time. And so I was very much at the tail end at the day school area, and my mom was a teacher at the day school, and she attended residential school. My grandparents and my great-grandparents attended residential school and industrial school, as well as my aunts and uncles. So I don't think you're going to find many Indigenous people that don't have that close of a relationship, because we all have that close of a relationship to the impact of us today. Sure. And intergenerationally on residential school. Now, saying all of that, Kausis is a mission reserve, meaning we had a residential school right on the reserve. And so we have been heavily impacted. Personally, I was an altar girl, and I was brought up in the Roman Catholic faith. And so as an adult, when I was asked to be the secondary delegate for Saskatchewan to go to Rome with Chief Marianne Daywalker-Pelche, from the AFN, we worked about a year, and they were weekly or biweekly calls, sometimes two, three times a week, in preparation for the audience with His Holiness. And in that case, we very much worked on different themes, who was going to say what exactly was the message that was wanting to be given to the Pope, and then the trip actually occurred. As a young girl who, I went through all the sacraments, I was an altar girl, right at ground level on, you know, at the mission, and had all of those impacts. It was very, very, it was ethereal is the best way that I could say it, to be amidst the beauty and the grandeur, the opulence of the Vatican, and to see exactly that it was a system. I saw it for myself that it was a system. And when I saw His Holiness, and it was like he was, stood out a little bit from his surroundings, because he exuded humility, he exuded love, he exuded wanting to understand, and it was very different than what I thought that it would be. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the first meeting, and then we went back the day after, I think, or 2 days after, and the apology happened, and we were all very surprised that the apology happened right in Rome. When we went there, we knew we were going to have an audience, and it was a larger audience than the one that we had before. And when we received the pamphlet, and I quickly went over the pamphlet before His Holiness came over, that's when I realized that the apology was right in the pamphlet. And it was incredible for me to hear that on behalf of my grandparents, my parents, my aunts and uncles, you know, that it suffered so much harm, as well as for even myself. Fast forward to 4 months after that, got to see him in Muscogee, and at that time, I was with Chief Daywalker again. When we were in Rome, we had a pair of moccasins that had incredible significant and spiritual value, and represented the little boys and little girls that never came home and that were affected by residential schools. And the Pope brought them back when he came, and he returned the moccasins to Chief Daywalker.
Wow.
And at that time, it was incredibly impactful. And he also gave both Chief Daywalker and myself an individual papal blessing. And that, to me, whether or not I follow the Catholic Church, which I don't per se any longer, it was incredibly meaningful to me.
It absolutely would be meaningful, impactful, and I really appreciate, Chief, you giving us a few minutes today as we reflect on the impact that Pope Francis had on the world. Chief, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Chief Eric Cabotin, Kansas First Nation, part of the delegation, as you just heard, that we're over meeting with the Pope at the Vatican. And then 4 months later, we had the Pope visits to Canada, where the apology came for the Catholic Church's role in residential schools. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.